Being a quad during COVID-19 is a very precarious and potentially lethal combination.
I vividly remember what it's like to have respiratory issues, and coronavirus really scared me. I didn't want to have to go back to the hospital.
I got wheels. Greetings, everyone. You are listening to the Quad Podcast, the place to come when you want to listen to quadriplegics talk about the ins and outs of our day-to-day living. I'm Bob Ness, a C6 quad since 1987, and my guest on this episode is Marion Paré, a wonderful person and very talented visual artist. We talk about the hurdles and hardships of being a quad and quarantining during COVID-19. There's already a lot for us quads to think about on a daily basis, and throwing a global pandemic our direction adds a layer of complexity that is compounded by our reliance on caregivers to help us get up in the morning, make it through the day, and go to bed at night. Because if we get sick with the coronavirus, it will be even more difficult to receive the care and help that we desperately need every day. As quads, we are already immunocompromised. And couple that with the fact that both Miriam and I have already been on ventilators during our initial hospitalization makes us incredibly sensitive and weary about who we are around and how we interact with everyone around us. Believe me, you do not want to be on a ventilator. We go over a number of topics, including wearing masks, video chats with friends and colleagues, and perhaps even the death knell of the handshake. Miriam is an incredibly talented mouth painter. And to be clear, a mouth painter is a person who paints by holding the brush in their mouth, not actually painting mouths. Please like and share this episode, and also follow Miriam on Instagram at Miriam Paré. That's MariamPare. I think you will really enjoy her work. You can reach out to me at quadpodcast4@gmail.com. That's quadpodcast and the number 4@gmail.com. Or tweet me at quadcast4. That's quadcast and the number 4. Enjoy our conversation. Well, 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 here we go on another podcast. This has been a while, and it's good to be back. And my first guest back during quarantine here is Marion Paré. Thank you so much for coming back after a year of not recording anything.
Hi, Bob. Great to be here. Great to be back, still kind of in quarantine.
Yeah, needless to say, a very interesting year for everybody. But I think even quads, even more so, just because of all of the things that we rely on daily, you know, from our PCAs to getting out and, you know, touching our chairs and who comes over and who wears masks and who puts on the hazmat suit and things like that. So, let's just start with how have you been doing? How have you been feeling through all of this, crazy town of quarantine and COVID-19?
Well, you know, Bob, it seems like this has been the longest year. Here we are halfway through the better part of this year, and I feel like I've lived 1,000 lifetimes.
Yeah, that's true.
And we've gone through so many phases since starting in April. I mean, I think I'm doing much better now, in some senses in terms of fear and stuff like that than I was at the beginning of the pandemic. It's evolved, but there's been a lot of interesting issues, I think, that I've seen myself go through compared to what some other people have gone through. I don't know. I'm kind of interested to hear what your experience is. Where do we start?
No, exactly. Well, at the beginning, because I think we can just start in March when everyone was just kind of like, really? We have to stay at home and not leave the house at all?
Yeah.
You know, it just seemed, you know, like, wow, if we go outside, we'll catch this illness, and nobody wants to get sick and die. And then, of course, we are immunocompromised. So if we get this, if we catch this virus, you know, coughing, if you're a quad, we don't have stomach muscles like everybody has, you know, able-bodied people have. So coughing becomes an issue, and we can't, you know, it's just not, you know, our bodies aren't as strong as an able-bodied person. So yeah. I kind of took that to be like, all right, well, I'm really going to stay inside, and I'm not going to go out, and I'm not going to see any people. And that's kind of the way it has to be in order to stay healthy, you know. And did you do that in March and April and May, like at the beginning?
Initially, I took it very seriously. And like you, I was really scared. Being a person who was once on a ventilator when I was in rehab when I was first injured.
Yeah, so I was on a ventilator too.
Yeah. I mean, I just have a trach scar now, but I very vividly remember what it's like to have respiratory issues, and coronavirus really scared me. I didn't want to have to go back to the hospital. So yeah, initially when it started.
And hospitals are also, not to interrupt you, but hospitals are like even more dangerous to be at than home. So, but go on.
Well, initially I was, when we first got the news that we would have to quarantine, my biggest concern was, okay, my caregivers, I still need care in my home. You know, what do I do? And I kind of made a plan. I spoke with some of my caregivers and I basically had to minimize the caregivers.
How many people do you have like in your quarter?
One in the morning that helps me get up, in the morning, and one that helps me get into bed at night. And then I would also have assistants during the day, you know, for work and stuff like that.
So is it the same person all 7 days?
No. And so it was very complex.
So how many people do you have?
Then Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, another person Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and then another person all nights, and then another person assisting during the day. So what I did was I pared it down. All the daytime caregivers, I said, I'm so sorry, but until we figure out what's going on with this, I have to minimize the amount of people I see. You know, any caregivers that were in high risk situations, like maybe working in a nursing home outside of me or something, I had to also have discussions with, because if people were outside seeing a lot of other people, I couldn't then invite them into my home to help me. So yeah, it was.
No, that's exactly the problem not the problem as much as it is the issue is, like you were saying, you know, you have people coming Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. It's like we're basically scheduling. We have like we're juggling schedules all day. Besides what we do when we're up and in our chair, like our caregivers are something else that are very, very important to us, and like we can't have our day without them. But then, as you were just touching on, they go out into the world, and then they might see other patients. Whether it's nursing home or other, you know, quads at home or whatever. And then they also have families, and you don't know how they are at home and who's in touch with whom. And it becomes this huge, there's so many variables, and this is like in one instance that we want to keep the variables to a minimum, you know?
Yeah. So, while still getting your needs met. So it was a challenge.
And while we can still get up during the day, and it's like, even though we can't go out or do anything, we're not going to sit in bed all day. We want to, you know, I mean, you work from home and I work from home. And so we want to be able to get some things done, even though there wasn't a heck of a lot of work to do. But I mean, as an artist, did you find inspiration?
I was also in a fellowship at the time. I was doing my residency at University of Illinois Chicago during the pandemic. Had a job with Craig H. Nielsen Foundation, a job with Pepsi. I mean, and all that was going on, and I had to find ways to do them from my home, to do everything from my home. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So then what did you do as far as, your caregivers, your PCAs, when they came over, did everybody put on masks and gloves, or how did you handle that?
Well, I talked with them and asked that when people came in to my home that they would wash their hands. That was at least one thing I knew I could do right off the bat. And initially, yeah, masks. But, you know, I couldn't really – there's issues that you get in situations where it's like you can't expect somebody to wear a mask in a hot bathroom while they're helping you shower. They can't breathe.
Exactly.
You know? So there are situations where I had to allow people – you know, circumstances to not wear the masks.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was it's a lot of fear, and I knew there was risks. There was a risk every time somebody came, and I just had to weigh that against my needs. And so,
yeah. And then you have your boyfriend living with you, right?
Yes, I do. Which was very fortunate at the time, because normally, you know, we just moved in together, and usually I live by myself, which I think about all the disabled people who live alone and had to quarantine by themselves. I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was nice to have somebody around to fill in the blanks, you know.
Just for little things that happened during the day. I know my wife and I were home. She did go out and work, but It's nice to have people around. We have to have people around because there's so much that needs to be done during the day. As independent as we are and like to think we are, we still just need help. You know, whether you drop something that would take an hour to pick up and somebody else 5 seconds, or you know, turning something on or heating something up. It's all very, you know, it's quicker and more efficient with other people, but it's, you know, once again, it's keeping fewer people, keeping the variables lower by having fewer people over. So, I mean, I know for me, I did the same thing where I have help in the morning, only. So I have, two different attendants who come. And, you know, one of them is 5 days and one of them is 2 days. And so, one of them, comes the 5 days a week and he lives, you know, with one other person. And then he's not in contact with a lot of other people. So, you know, so I feel very comfortable with him. And then my other attendant comes and she wears a mask now, because she goes and sees other patients. And once again, we don't know who those other patients have in their house and how safe they're being and what if they're touching or other, you know, other people or, you know, sneezing or going out to dinner, or like everyone has different comfort levels.
Did you and Bridget have to discuss, you know, the fact that your wife, Bridget, worked outside of the home during the quarantine? Did you two discuss that before?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
As a risk and made the decision that she was going to continue?
Yeah. She would wear a mask and gloves, you know, when she was gone. And when she would come in the door, she would just take everything off and all of her clothes off and just put them right in the washer.
Yeah.
And go right into the shower. And then she would clean up and wash the, you know, the potential COVID off. And then we would start, you know, our evening, with you know, dinner and hanging out and stuff like that. So that was, it was a little hairy at the beginning because we really didn't know.
Right.
What was going on? So, so we got over that, and we're kind of still, you know, we're still in it. Where, you know, if you're out in a risky situation, we're not together. You still have to keep washing your hands and stay vigilant and things like that, because it's easy to let your guard down, especially after 6 months of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and things are still continuing to change. I mean, even though we're here all these months later, and it seems like the with the caregiver situation and COVID, now I'm finding other ways that COVID is now disrupting my care in some ways, like with childcare, the fact that, you know, one of my main caregivers happens to have children, and now that school into session, a lot of people have issues with childcare, which then makes conflicts for people to be able to work, you know, for mm-hmm. caregivers to be able to work. So I have had other challenges with that as well.
And then, but then you have a little bit of flexibility as far as like times in the morning, where it's like, I know for me, like, I don't care if I get up at 5 a.m. or 8 a.m.
Right.
Like, it's just like, as long as I get up.
Yeah. You have to tell me what time. And to meet these challenges. Yeah. You just have to be willing to do what it takes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to keep, and you have to keep going. And it's just, I feel this year has felt like it has taken forever, but it also, like, it's in the blink of an eye, it's all of a sudden, you know, it's August. So, and then when, you know, things started to feel like they started to loosen up a little bit and we could go out, what's your comfort level as far as, is going out in public lately? I mean, what have you done? Have you gone to dinner? Or are you just still kind of keeping it locked down?
It's really been recent, you know, when they opened up to the phase, I forget what number we're on, but when restaurants started opening for outdoor seating, I did start going out a little more, but I'm still not going into like grocery stores. I'll still do like the grocery pickup instead, you know, or I'm doing drive-throughs, but not really, you know, ordering food, but not really going.
Everything is being delivered.
I'm still being careful. I'm getting outside a lot more, which is nice, like the forest preserves and stuff. I find nature is a good way to social distance.
And having fresh air, like, you know, it was awful in February and April when it was, or from March and April when it was chilly, but like now summertime is like, hey, let's get outside, let's get some fresh air. And you know, I mean, we'll see people in 3D a little bit, you know, just whether they're walking by on the street, if you're, or like you said, you go to the Forest Reserve just to get some exercise and fresh air. I know for me, like we haven't, and I should say we and I, like I'm only comfortable going to a person's house. Like I like just going to someone's backyard and sitting outside. Like I'm definitely not in the let's go to a restaurant phase of my mind yet.
Oh, not yet. No.
Yeah. I need to kind of have a more controlled environment and have it be outside where there's air moving and we're still like far apart. So we've done like, you know, two and three couples in a backyard where we're, you know, at least 6 to 10 feet apart. And it's nice to see friends and hang out and do that stuff. But it's kind of like you have to take this year and just kind of like chalk it up to, you know, posterity. Like, hey, we're not going to see people and have a dinner party for until next year, maybe.
You know, yeah. But I think this unique situation has, I don't know, taught us all something. I think there's something to be said if we want to look at a silver lining. If you could say that anything positive come out of this for you, for this whole situation, have you seen any silver linings? I can think of one.
Well, go ahead while I try to think.
You know, I was just kind of trying to say, you know, maybe we should think of the bright side. There are some good things. Like I've noticed some of the changes we've made because of coronavirus. Like for instance, I've been, you know, I see my primary doctor every once in a while, or if I see my gastroenterologist or other doctors, we've been doing it on telehealth, which I have been loving. And I hope that people continue doing some of these things that we've converted to online.
Yeah, I'm not sure that a lot of medical things were legal online yet until it all of a sudden became, a must do because we couldn't go to the doctors. We should talk to someone about that. I wonder if that is the truth. We'll investigate because it's nice to be able to see a doctor online.
Well, I've been noticing it just getting the appointments quicker. You know, when you're sick, you don't want to go to the doctor's office. You can avoid, you know, exposing yourself. It's been good. And, you know, even with school, I know that even with people working, some of these innovations that people are doing for coronavirus, I think are good for the disabled community in general.
Yeah. You
know,
yeah.
Allowing people to telecommute to work. You know, these are things that we should have implemented years ago for people with disabilities, but now it's only now because everybody needs it that we're making strives to make these changes for accessibility.
Yeah, there was actually an article, I think in New Mobility about it, where it's like, this is finally kind of leveling the playing field for cocktail hours and dinner parties because, you know, everybody started to have the cocktail hour, the virtual cocktail hour, and everyone's hanging out on Zoom and FaceTime and Skype and, you know, name your online platform. And now we didn't have to worry about, being lifted up steps or wondering about, accessibility of people's houses and their bathrooms and things like that.
Yeah. The internet is barrier free.
Yeah. Every meeting, every cocktail party is barrier free. And we hang out at our own house and chit chat with people. And I don't know about you, but I've found that I've connected with a lot of friends of mine that I haven't seen in quite a while. I mean, we might text every now and again and talk, but we've been, you know, I'll send a text to someone like for a birthday or whatever. And then we'll say like, hey man, we should FaceTime. And then we end up having this really great, really fun 45 minute to an hour, you know, cocktail hour with friends, you know, in faraway places. It's, I think that would be my silver lining is that I'm seeing people that are friends and that I love for a long time and from afar a lot more often than I used to. So
that's so nice. Yeah. People have more time, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we're all here. Everyone's got their computers and they've got their, you know, and I mean, Zoom has kind of been all of a sudden nobody heard of it until March. And, and now everyone's on it all the time. It's great, and it really is kind of a great leveler of the playing field for people to get together and hang out. It's nothing like seeing people in person, and it's still a handful of times that we have gotten together. It's hard to see people and not give them a hug. You know, it's just like the physical contact with other people is something I really miss, where you see someone and you just touching and you give someone a hug because you love them. They're your friends.
Yeah. Yeah. We can't go on like this forever with the virtual world. I know a lot of people have screen fatigue and,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
exactly.
All that. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, well, hopefully, like we were saying earlier, it's probably going to be next year sometime where we can finally go back out. I mean, we're all dying to see concerts. We're all dying to see theaters. We're all, we want to go to a gallery opening and see some Marion Perret artwork.
Say that, it's just not the same seeing art virtually.
No. Yeah, I mean, I know when I go to galleries, I like looking at the brush marks on paints. I like it.
Yeah.
And then I have this, it's my instinct is to kind of like pick it off, but I know that would be a no-no. But, it'll come back, but it's just kind of strange. But I wanted to ask you about masking up and wearing a mask. How do you are you able to put one on by yourself? Do you put it over your ears, over your head? What's your most comfortable thing, as far as wearing a mask? And when do you wear it? When do you wear it?
I wear a mask every time I leave my house. Mm-hmm. My apartment building, I don't know if I remember I told you this, Bob, but 5 people in my apartment building had coronavirus.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So
that's insane.
I live in a building that's wheelchair accessible. It's wheelchair accessible condominiums. So there's many other people with disabilities who live in my building. So it just so happens that 4 of my neighbors got coronavirus.
That's incredible.
And one of their caregivers did. So 5 people in total. And the caregiver actually passed away from coronavirus.
Oh my God.
Yes. And the two of my neighbors who did get coronavirus, one was I won't use any names, but he was an 80-year-old man who was in a wheelchair and he survived.
That's great.
And so did my, the other resident neighbors. So I was really glad that, unfortunately the one caregiver did pass away. But so the reason
it's why that close to you,
every time I leave my house, I wear a mask.
Yeah, even in the hallways.
Elevator, I hit it with my elbow.
I was going to say, I do the same thing. Like whenever we leave our apartment here, put on a mask in the hallway and no more than 2 people in the elevator. And I use my elbow for all the buttons and stuff like that. So yeah, we're the same way. And even being out, like I just was out this afternoon a little bit going around the neighborhood to get a little exercise and I'm wearing a mask just going around just because you don't know where and when someone has sneezed or they walk by you, they're going to breathe on you or something like that. It's just, it's all about the aerosols and things like that. So
Bob, as a person who pushes a manual wheelchair, you push your chair.
Mm-hmm.
Does that worry you with germs on your hands? And
well, yeah, that's another thing I wanted to talk about. It's just I'm touching my tires all the time. My tires aren't going through goo all the time and they're not, people aren't sneezing on them. So it's no different than, I guess, anything else. I do get in and I wash my hands, but it's something that, we use our hands for so much. I push my chair. So it's like they get dirty just in general. So you got to wash the dirt off because of that. But yeah, it's not, I don't have people sneezing on my tires that I know of or my push rims that I know of, but it's still, I think everyone's far more cognizant about keeping their hands clean now than they ever have been.
Right. He has been suggesting people not touch their face and their, their nose and their mask. But, as people with disabilities, a lot of people realize that we use our mouths I use my mouth for everything. So I did have to think a lot about surfaces and what surfaces touched other surfaces.
Yeah.
And eventually my mouth or my face. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to talk to you about that. Cause it's like, we use our mouth, like, for example, when I went out to roll around the neighborhood, I put in my AirPods and in order to get them out of that little case, I have to bite them. So I take them, I bite them and I put them in my ear. And it's like, okay, that's, it's been in my apartment and things like that. I don't, it's not like I've dropped it anywhere, but it's like, it's, it's our mouth is what we use to pick things up or grab things and pull, you know, like take our gloves on and off. It's just something that we do all the time. And it's necessary and there's no way around it. So, and then when you put a mask on, it's weirder because you can't really bite through the mask. You know, I have to lift my mask up and do things and then pull it back down in order to get things on, which I'm sure you do too, unless you have one of those masks that has a zipper on it that you can zip down and start doing that. But then another thing, wearing a mask is like quads. We can't really project far with our voices.
I was just going to say that.
We have soft voices.
Nobody can hear me.
I mean, the amount of times that we repeat ourselves just in general, you know, like while we're out, like, excuse me, you know, if we're at a store or talking to a checkout person or whatever, I'm sorry, can you say that again? And you'd be like, oh, can you put that in one back? And it's like, excuse me, I can't hear you. And then you just end up yelling.
Even down and shorter than somebody, plus you're speaking through a mask and then the plexiglass shield. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like five layers.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's almost borderline on the absurd. And, you know, I hope we look back on this and we learn and we laugh and things like that. But it's just, yeah, it's just, we just, since there's so many things we don't know, we got to keep on going through. But one thing that I did also that kind of made me chuckle is what's going away is the handshake. And as a quad, you know, whenever we meet people and you put your hand out to shake somebody, I'm sure this has happened to you thousands of times because you meet people all over. It's like the handshake is always kind of odd. Between quads, we kind of have the understanding where it's like, hey, you know, our hands are going to be a little this. You know, they're going to be floppy. They're going to be fists. They're going to be whatever. But like meeting people for the first time and you kind of put your hand out and you shake and it's just kind of like, well, you might get it right. You might get it wrong. And it's just like, I kind of don't miss handshaking.
Yeah, good riddance for that too. Whenever I hold my hand out to shake somebody's hand, first of all, they're confused because I'm holding out my left hand because I can't hold out my right. So they usually don't know what to do. So they fist bump me.
Yeah, exactly. get a lot of fist bumps. But now
I don't miss handshakes either. So I always usually explain to people like, sorry, I don't really shake hands very well, but thank you.
Yeah, I'll do that. And I try to say, look at it, Mike. Like if we miss the handshake, I'll try to redo it again. I'm like, hey, man, give me one more chance. You know, I'm not like I'm beseeching them to do it again, but like, hey, let's try one more time. Let me show you. I can really get a good handshake if I hit it right. And just to kind of let them know that, like, you know, I'm my heart's in it. Like, I'll try to make a good handshake. But if it doesn't, if you don't stick the landing, then it's no big whoop, you know? And you kind of just make a little joke of it, make a little light of it. And then, you know, you bring your levity to the situation. And then we move on and head over to the snack table and order a martini or whatever.
That's right.
But you mentioned your work. I wanted to talk about that a little bit too, because are you still able to do, you're a mouth painter. For those of you who haven't listened to any of my podcasts with Miriam earlier, she is a mouth painter and a very talented mouth painter at that. And and she does very, very great work. And I urge you all to go to her website at MiriamParre.com and take a look at it. But have you been getting a lot of work done? Are you finding inspiration? What's going on with that?
You know, I've been doing about the same amount of work because I am fortunate. I have always been working at home. So that's almost stayed the same, I think. You know, what has kind of changed is, you know, everybody else. So, you know, any gallery shows that I had planned, that a lot of that got canceled. A lot of things got canceled, Bob.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. I mean, everything got canceled.
And so, you know, I am able to stay busy by producing art, of course, but some of the other jobs did kind of, the more commercial jobs did fizzle out a little bit, and what could be switched to virtual was, you know, as far as like mental health goes, but I think that was a challenge, is not having a lot of inspiration, being in the house a lot, having the extra stress in my life made it kind of hard to focus.
Well, I mean, that was my question initially is like, can you, like, can you find inspiration? Or like, I know my brain just felt pretty numb for a while. So if you're an artist, like, and you go out and you see somebody or you see something that inspires you, or, I mean, you know, you might be at home in your studio all day, but you can't be prolific if you're not motivated, but just inspired, I guess.
True. I think that's true of almost any job. Anything you do, you have to feel like you can do it. And it has been hard. I mean, everything that went on with the protests as well, and the Black Lives Matter, and, you know, the coronavirus. I mean, that, you know, and even other things like people didn't think about, like, I had a death in my family recently, and even things like funerals were affected by coronavirus, and the traveling and, you know, being able to gather, and all those things affected, you know, my mental health. So it, you know, it did suffer a little. I'm doing much better now. I think that there was a point a few months ago where I think I was really struggling emotionally, just with the weight of this all. It was overwhelming. I know we're having like a light conversation about it now and talking about challenges with caregivers and being afraid of germs, but
it's cumulative.
Heavy for many of us.
Yeah, this year has been cumulative. There's things like that have been, there were struggles 4 months ago that aren't as bad now, but there are things that just have lingered. And you know, like you said, you've had an emotional year, you know, not just with the coronavirus and everything else going on. You've had, you know, you've had, you know, struggles. You've had you know, death in the family, things like that. That it's hard. It's already difficult to process, and then when you can't be around other people, I can't imagine it, because that's where you find, you know, solace, is with friends and family and people that you can you know, talk about, you know, your you know, what's in your mind, what's in your heart, and try to heal.
Yeah, and getting back to normal.
Yeah.
Being around people. And, you know, a lot of people feel it in different ways. And yeah. How has your mental health been?
Mine has been okay. I mean, it's weird because you can't get out and see people and have, you know, have laughs and things like that. But I in my work has been very, very slow. It's just with video, people can't go out and shoot things, so that there are, you know, there's no concerts, there's no interviews, you know, they're starting to happen now, but for the first 3-4 months, nobody was going outside for anything. So everything just kind of just stopped, you know. And, you know, I do have friends who work in the restaurant business and in the venue business, and they're still not at work. And it's just kind of, that's horrible. But I mean, I'm doing okay. I mean, it's just, you know, me and my wife at home, and we've been watching movies. I've been reading a lot. I've read like 5 or 6 books during this time, which is, it's great. You know, I feel good, like ticking off a list of all the books that I've purchased, and instead of us having them sit there on my bookshelf and look at them, I'm actually going through.
Does that mean we have a podcast coming soon of book recommendations from?
Oh, if you'd like, we can do that. Quad sitting at home reading. It's if you'd like, we can go over it. But one book I did read that I think everybody should read is called The Great Influenza, which is about the 1918 pandemic, which really kind of is a cautionary tale for what's going on right now. And I hope that a lot of the things that happened in 1918 don't repeat themselves the way they did this year. That happened in 1918 don't happen again this year, because it was the same thing, where it was kind of a slow burn all year. And then in October of 1918 is when 30% of the deaths happened in the entire death toll. So here we are a month out from there. When it gets cold and flu season comes around, it's a little scary, but that book is great. It's a must, I think, for everybody right now. So you kind of understand, it was pretty much the same sociological, political.
Exactly. Yeah. Or similarly. Yeah. It's important that we know that.
We want to learn from history so that we don't, you know, as the old saying goes, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it.
I'm
so, but yeah, it's been an interesting year, and but things are starting to pick up a little bit work wise for me, which is nice, And, you know, I'm not afraid to, try anything new. And so I might do a different business with a friend of mine. I might try a whole bunch of different things because you never know what's going to happen. So
right.
Just keep knocking on doors and doing all that stuff, you know.
Right.
So it's just to keep busy and keep our mental health going. But yeah, so it's just this year has been just crazy, and it's not easy. It's not easy to be a quad in general, and it's not easy, you know, to do this in quarantine and not see people. And, you know, and so it's nice to at least chat with other quads and see what they're going through, and hope everybody is keeping it together, because it's not easy.
I wonder how it's going to ride out, if we're going to be dealing with this for the next year, if we're going to have to do another podcast on this when we're in it after a full year.
What's
going to happen?
I would definitely want to talk more, and I might even talk to more quads about what they've been doing, because every quad is different just in general, how we deal with, whether it's a power chair or a manual chair, and how many attendants we have. And if we have an attendant, some people are independent enough to do it themselves, and some do their care themselves, and some people, you know, can't. So everybody's experience is so individual, and I know, as profound as it sounds, it's the truth. So, I hope we look back on this year and we can kind of, you know, scratch our head and chuckle and learn. Mm-hmm. And then and think about, you know, how good we have it, because we're going out to dinner again and seeing a bunch of friends and having dinner parties and cocktail parties and things like that, and it might even be lifted up the stairs to people's places or whatever it is. I know that I'm going to be going out to shows more. I'm not going to say no to invitations. I'm going to be like, I feel like every weekend is going to be a new gathering, and everyone's going to be just dying to get out.
Maybe once they get a vaccine,
start
going out a little with more confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the vaccine has to work. That's like, there's so many other variables with that where it's like, you know, there are people that don't want to vaccinate their kids, so they're going to want to take a vaccine with this. I mean, there's conspiracy theories about everything. So, you know, are we going to get the vaccine, make sure it works, and if everybody takes it, you know, we might be wearing masks for the next 4 years or 5 years or until we reach herd immunity, which is going to be at least 60% of the population, which at 300 million would be about 180 if, you know, I do just a quick math problem. But, you know, it's who knows? That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that nobody knows what's going on. So that's kind of
for the best. That's right.
That's kind of where we are. But yeah, but in the meantime, let's everybody wash your hands and wear masks and be kind to everybody and be good. So, you know, and you keep creating beautiful artwork, and we'll
thank you, Bob. I will do that.
And we'll keep following you on the Instagrams and the Facebooks.
That's right.
And wherever else your socials. Why don't you plug your socials? What are they?
Yeah. I'm at Miriam Pare on Instagram, and MiriamPare.com is my website. I'd love it if people come say hi.
Mm-hmm. You should do that. Everybody should check it out. And I want to thank everybody for listening this far. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach me at quadpodcast4@gmail.com. Again, that's quadpodcast4@gmail.com. You can tweet me at quadcast4. And everyone, stay happy, healthy, and we'll talk to you soon. Oh, God.